I have a hard word for you today. A hard word from the prophet Isaiah. There is reason to despair, to adopt nihilism, extreme cynicism, reason to scorn, reason to believe it's all meaningless, that there is no purpose. More than that, there is evidence, hard scientific evidence, that the world is in a dire way, that God's world is in peril, that humans are ruining it, destroying ecosystems, endangering and diminishing species and habitats. There's more. There's evidence, proof that millions of people are suffering unimaginable horrors right now, today, across God's earth. Millions suffer daily for lack of food, lack of shelter, lack of health care, lacking a basic sense of security, while others of us are fat and happy, possessed of more than we could possibly use or consume. And it gets worse yet. Among the leaders of the nations of the world are tyrants and despots, dictators and autocrats, strong men, some cruel beyond even our imagining. Here's a hard, unpleasant truth. The world is lopsided. For a great many people, justice is no more than a shimmering mirage they will never reach. The world is so lopsided, so cockeyed and out of proportion, justice so wanting, so absent for so many. It is as if the haves and the have-nots inhabit different realms, different planets altogether. That's how it is in the 8th century before the Common Era, when the prophet Isaiah is writing and speaking. Isaiah sees a ruler, a king, who is selfish, craven, imperious, full of his own power, self-impressed with the trappings of his office, a king who loves himself more than his people, who loves his throne more than the good of the land, a king addicted to, drunk on, and reckless with power. And speaking on behalf of God, Isaiah, the prophet, weeps and wails at the injustice of it all. And he aims his most precise and cutting criticism at the guy at the top, the king, the one who, above all others, has the resources and the power to unskew, to smooth out the lopsided society of ancient Israel, the one who, if he were truly a man of God, a man of mercy, would have mercy on the poor, but who is lacking in mercy, lacking in kindness. And in addition to critiquing the king for his craven, imperious, favor-the-rich policies, in addition, Isaiah looks as if right past the king, through him, and proclaims a different future. Despite what is right before Isaiah's eyes, Isaiah sees a future brighter, finer, and fairer than the present. And to be clear, Isaiah doesn't see human leaders making it better or getting better themselves. He doesn't see kings or presidents or prime ministers or chieftains or sultans or supreme leaders evolving, getting better, kinder, more just, better at governing. Isaiah doesn't see it that way. Frankly, Isaiah takes a dim view of human leaders. But that doesn't leave Isaiah hopeless. Far from it. Isaiah looks to God for hope. What Isaiah does see is God coming down out of heaven, to intervene, to right wrongs, to straighten out that which is so askew. Isaiah prophesies that it will take nothing less than a God-ordained leader, a leader around whose shoulders is wrapped a mantle of righteousness, on whose head is a crown of thorns, whose scepter is kindness, who, quoting Isaiah, with righteousness judges the poor and decides with equity for the meek of the earth. Isaiah proclaims that this leader will emerge as a king of peace, whose reign will be one of peace and righteousness for all the land and all the people. And what's more, in Isaiah's vision, the entire creation partakes up and participates in this peaceful, righteous, and just reign. Wolf and lamb, calf and lion, adder and infant, mountain and ocean. And embedded in this oracle, this prophecy of what shall be, is this most marvelous image. God speaking in the first person, God proclaims, they will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now, church, you might read this oracle, this prophecy from the mouth of the prophet and say, balderdash, twaddle, idiocy. You might say Isaiah is a fantasist, a deluded romantic. Such a realm as Isaiah's peaceable kingdom is a fairy tale. Fairy tale and nothing more. You could. No one would fault you for it. You could proclaim yourself a cynic, or a nihilist, or even just a realist, and declare that Isaiah, he's a lunatic. There's nothing to be done about this old wreck of a world, or about the tyrants who strut and hurt and destroy. You could. Or you could say to yourself, I'm with Isaiah. I'm with the God of Abraham and Sarah, the God of Moses and Miriam, the God of Jesus and the Marys. I'm on the side of hope. I will lean hard and deep into a future where the score is being kept, where the sufferings of this world are noted up in heaven, where the God of heaven weeps at human pain and means to make it right. Means to make up for it. See, what Isaiah offers is a critique of the tyrant. And it's not just any critique, it's God's critique. It's divine critique of the tyrant. Isaiah lets down from heaven a divine plumb line by which to measure potentates and kings, presidents and prime ministers, a plumb line that measures them, measures their leadership. Not by how much power they have, but by their commitment to justice. Isaiah's vision proclaimed in our sacred texts. Isaiah, this large and lovely prophet whose image is framed in stained glass in churches and synagogues the world over and back there in the corner. Isaiah, his vision is the measuring rod by which world rulers are to be measured. So hear this, ruler, tyrant, president, prime minister, be warned. If you don't decide with equity for the meek of the earth, you're on the wrong side of God, and God is keeping track. Ruler, tyrant, president, and prime minister, be warned. Are you judging the poor of the earth with righteousness? For if not, oh, brace yourself. Prepare, for there will be an accounting. One of the reasons Christianity was so popular with enslaved persons in the early centuries of this country, one of the reasons Christianity is so popular today with the poor all around the earth, is that it promises the enslaved person, the person who suffers injustice, the oppressed, the parents whose babies are hungry and starving. It promises them a reckoning. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not here on Earth. But one day, at least in heaven, there will be a reckoning. The score is being kept. Your sufferings are wept over, seen and regretted more than you can know. Your suffering is known and felt in heaven. Your oppressors, too, are being judged. If you are that parent who has not the wherewithal to feed or clothe or shelter or protect your child, this God, Isaiah's God, our God, this God who is keeping the score, whose eye is on the sparrow, amen? And the polar bear, and the refugee, and the prisoner. This God is the difference between despair and hope, between desolate misery and some measure of consolation. And this is a gift of Judaism and Christianity to this world. God knows there's reason to despair, and no one can blame you for being a cynic or a skeptic or a nihilist, or even just a realist. But as for me, I choose Isaiah every time. I choose the God of Abraham and Sarah, of Moses and Miriam, of Jesus and the Marys. As for me, I'm with God. I choose hope.